Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts
and welcome home to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Here, this is the spot, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And we have guests from Australia. Yes, I want you guys on your best behavior because we have Karen DeMaul here. Oh, yes, Karen D, straight from Australia. We are going to talk about recovering from cancer. We're talking about Creatrix, and we're talking about a little bit about accounting and some fun stuff. Okay, so help me welcome her to the edge right over there. That's sweetie pie over there. That's Karen D. How you doing, Karen?
I'm great. How are you?
I can't complain about nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm so glad to see you here with me, smiling and looking good. I love those glasses.
Yeah, I love them too. They're fabulous. I always get comments about them.
Yeah, you do, girl. They probably cost you a pretty penny. Eyewear is so expensive.
They can be, and I bought sunglasses as well that have got lots of bling as well too. I get lots of comments of those ones.
I know, you know, but eyeglasses can take years off your look.
Yeah, I actually like myself with glasses on rather than taking them on. When I take them off, it sort of makes me feel uncomfortable, which is strange.
It makes me feel uncomfortable too because I can't see shit. So welcome to The Edge. Would you share with my brains a little bit about you, your story, and where you are at this point?
Yeah, sure. So hi, brains.
Hey.
So basically for me, I grew up with a lot of grief. I had a lot of suppressed grief. You know, my father died when I was 10, you know, and oh, wow. he was the love of my life. You know, he was my daddy. And life went on somehow. And then 3 short years later, my mum remarried this amazing man, Graham, who was so full of life, and he just died in his sleep.
Oh, come on.
For us and for mum, it was a wild time, like so much grief and suppressed grief. We you know, obviously been through so much. Then my mother decided to move up to Glen Innes, which is a little country town about 8 hours of Sydney. And so I was 15 and I didn't want to go, so I stayed in Sydney. Now, as a 15-year-old, that meant I had so much freedom and become the party gal.
Out there party drinking. The party girl with the blinging glasses on.
Exactly. Oh, I didn't have blinging glasses back then. But what it did do was I put up this big front, you know, that I am, you know, I'm a survivor. I've got this. But inside, I was feeling like, what about me? What's wrong with me? Why have I been left alone? Mm. You know, I was trying to do the right thing by mum because I knew she was grieving and she was, you know, in a bad way. But as a 15-year-old, I still hadn't quite sort of come to terms with things myself. So I on the inside, I was crying. You know, on the outside, I had this big front, but I was believing I wasn't worthy and that I'm just not good enough and I'm not lovable.
I wonder where those things come into play. Did you have outside influences? Did you have other relatives that weren't supportive? Did you have a bad experience with your first boyfriend? Where did that come from?
I had a big supportive family. Like my mum was one of 18. She had 18 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
I had cousins, you know, surrounded by them. And I think it was just more, I sort of pulled away from that. Like I started believing that friends are more important than family. So that was my way of dealing with it. So obviously through that whole process, you know, I always had a weight problem. So that was hanging in the background as well too. I always struggled with eating healthy and obviously living alone. I didn't have the rules of your parents telling you what to eat and what not to eat. So I lived on, you know, toast and Vegemite.
Let me ask you a little bit about that. You lived on your own at 15. What, you had your own apartment or something?
Yeah, so basically mum did set me up with my own. She's put me in an apartment with my brother to begin with, but he struggled. Within 6 months, he moved up to Glenis as well. He couldn't deal without mum. He was still grieving. So he got his first mechanic job with our stepfather. So when he went, it was a big change for him as well. So he went through a depression state, so he moved up to Glenis. So then I moved into a unit with a girlfriend, but mum paid my rent. So until the age of 18, I said I'd take over my own rent. I was doing college, learning shorthand and typing, and wow. Then got a job.
Shorthand, wow, do you still use that?
No, I could never.
Really? I used it a couple times, girl. I'm telling you, it saved me.
When I learned it, I could never read the damn thing back. Like so I never got a job doing shorthand. Wow. I even remember my first job. They said, "Okay, let's try shorthand again." It was like, "No, sorry, I couldn't read back anything they said to me." Wow. So shorthand was never my thing. Typing, yes, but not shorthand. So so once I started working, I started paying my own rent. Then money problems as well too. Like not very much money at the age of 18. I was a survivor.
You were pretty mature too. I mean, at an early age, there's, no way. My daughter didn't move out till 28. And when I moved out, I never lived alone. When I moved out, I got married. So, there's a certain, you got some moxie there, sister.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and you know what? Everything I went through made me who I am.
That's right.
Gave me the strength to be who I am. And, even to this day, like my mum has since passed away, she wrote a diary, and the last page of the diary is to me, and this will even make me a little bit teary, and about how proud she was of me and that, how strong I am.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead and get full of it. I just lost my mother this year.
Yeah, it's sad.
And it was, I was bent, but I wasn't broken, Yeah. And I had a relationship probably a lot like your mother. We were extremely close.
Yeah.
And we could have those conversations, and there was a lot of love there. There's a lot of women that don't have that. Mm. And it's hard that you look at your first female and fathers too, first male role models, and they're just your everything. They illuminate your life. So many people are subjected with abuse or trauma or abandonment issues. So when you have someone that you're close to and then they disappear, I can understand why those things might surface in you. So mm-hmm. As you progressed, you went on to college and you became an accountant, a numbers runner.
A numbers, yes. So I always thought that was the other thing, because I left school in year 10. I thought over here, that's 15 years of age. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously after dad passed and Graham passed. So I left school. And to go to uni, you go to year 12, which is another 2 years afterwards. So at the time, I thought I was stupid. I thought I was street smart. I knew I was street smart, but I believed I was not book smart. So I obviously did well at typing and did well at work, and every job I did well at. So at the age of 30, I decided I should go study something. And so I had a mentor at work, my boss, who was an accountant. He goes, "You should study accounting, get a piece of paper for that." So I went and did accounting, did 10 years of studying while I was working full time, got my degree, my CPA. Then after that, it was like, okay, what am I going to do now? What am I going to study now? I've just been doing 10 years of studying while I was working. So then I went on to the self-development side and started off with a bit of Reiki and tarot reading, and then went and joined in some self-development courses and went to a weekend away because I knew I was seeking more. I had a great life. I had great friends. I had a job. I had, people loved me. But something inside of me was looking for something. My partner, we had a great relationship, but something just wasn't right. So I went to this weekend, self-development weekend, and then that turned into a week process where we did processes every day. We had to go out and run every day. Now, I had to go and do exercise every morning, and I hated exercise.
Girl.
Like, for me, exercise meant death. And to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go running around. And we had to do it in our teams. We were put into teams. And I, being this, you know, smoking couch potato sloth going out partying girl sort of girl.
Oh, boy.
That sort of thing didn't quite sit well. And I was worried because you had to look after the weakest link. Mm-hmm. And then I actually realized I was the weakest link.
Damn it.
And the emotions that brings up for you, knowing that all these people are going to, well, you're thinking that they're not going to like you, they're going to hate you. And we do care. We feel like we don't like being judged.
Right.
And again, I internalize that, like you sort of keep inside, you put up this big front, you know, it's all good. But at the end of it, I found out that by being being vulnerable and actually doing the things that I ended up being the person that they all thought was amazing because I kept on attempting it, just kept on doing it. And even on one of the days, it was been raining down really heavy and people were doing like those jumping into puddles and doing dives into puddles.
Right, right.
And I would never have thinking of doing that. And I thought, I'm going to do it. And I just dived into it. And the exhilaration I felt afterwards was amazing, just to be really face that fear and get in there and do it. So I had lots of aha moments on that week.
Wow.
And from there, I decided I want to, I hired a coach out of that as well, who sort of helped me through some of my things, and then decided I wanted to help others the same way that I've been helped. And
what was that magic? That was Creatrix?
Well, I started out with a lot more other modalities. I went kinesiology first. Then I did NLP, hypnosis, became a hypnosis trainer, timeline therapy, all these different modalities. Like I love them too. And then I discovered Creatrix through a Facebook post by someone else talking about releasing limiting beliefs, all those beliefs.
I don't know what it is, but Maz should really pat Facebook on the back, because I've had several of your transformologists on the show with me. And yeah. I can tell you at least four or five of them found it through a Facebook post.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And because it is, and it's basically, I believe we attract things to ourselves, that we find things when we're meant to see them.
Absolutely.
So when I saw her post, it was very much, yeah. And I was actually thinking, oh, timeline therapy, because timeline therapy helps release limiting beliefs. But when she said, oh, no, Creatrix, well, of course, I, you know, being who I am, went Googling.
Right. What is this stuff?
And I was like, wow, just by watching the videos and reading everything about it, I was like, I want to know more about this. So I contacted them and I was booked into the course within a week. I said, I want this for me. I want this for my clients. Beforehand, like if I wanted to, I was trying to build a business between hypnosis and NLP, and I didn't have the ability or the belief in myself that people would want to work with me. So even with all the work I'd done by learning those modalities, I still didn't feel good enough. I still didn't feel worthy. And it was after I did Creatrix and the
right, the symphony moment.
Exactly, that I felt so completely different. And now I believe in myself. I believe that people will find me because they will connect with me and they'll be ready to work with me.
Well, they say that it works like magic. I mean, you know, essentially, it doesn't take a long time. You know, people normally believe that healing takes a long time, but it doesn't take a long time for a scab to grow over a wound.
And exactly.
If you keep picking at it, though, it never heals.
Exactly.
And once it heals, if you treat it and nurture it, the scar goes away.
Yeah.
So you started with Creatrix. What was a revelation for you there? What was your aha moment there? Something that you had discovered that you hadn't discovered with these other modalities?
It was very much this me. Who is me? Like, I didn't know who I was. And but by doing creatrix, I actually found me again. And I think it was because I'd hidden so much by squashing things down, by putting up this big front. When I sort of realized who I was, and creatrix helped me find that, that changed everything. So it allowed me to not allow people to judge me, not to care if people judge me, because that's their issues, not my issues.
Absolutely.
I was afraid to be me, I think, beforehand. And once I went through the creatrix process, so that was the big thing, not afraid to be me, not afraid to, you know, show the world who I am. So
exactly. That's pretty amazing. So you come home. Now, are you with your partner then?
Yep, still with my partner.
Okay, and then you come home and you're this brand new you. As we explained before, you know, when we talked in the green room, the original you was designed. The new you, you're able to create.
Create, yes.
And exactly. So now you come in there and you're looking fine and fluffy, and you done dived in a puddle of mud before. And now here's this new woman. Did he recognize the difference? And what was his take on it?
His take was, it's funny. It's when you change inside about yourself, it changes your relationships with other people, in the sense that they, I don't know, we were much better off. Like, we were happier. I was getting more from him because I was getting it from myself first. So that's where the problem is. We go looking outside ourselves for the answers and for them to make us happy, but they can't do that. We have to do that from inside. And that's where creatrix is amazing, to actually discover that. And when you change from the inside, you then reflect that out to everyone else, and the relationships, I don't know, my relationship got better without really trying to change him.
Right.
It's amazing.
So you have a new level of self-confidence. You have an ease. You have a I don't give a care attitude about what everyone else thinks, because what everyone else thinks doesn't define who I am.
Correct.
But that is something that's so hard for people. You know, that happened to me when I was in middle school, and I graduated from middle school, and I went to walk across the stage. I'll never forget it. I had my hair up in a pretty French roll and a long, beautiful pink dress with a nice neckline. And I go out and they call my name, and our next graduate is April Zachary. You know, I walked out there and them little frogs booed me. The whole audience, in front of my parents, my cousins. I couldn't believe this. But you know what I did? That was the first day that I realized that these people were not important to me.
Yeah.
That these people were lying. They were imposters, that they pretended, and, you know, they shared their lunch with me and we went roller skating and this, that, and the other. These little rodents didn't like me.
Mm.
And I had to look at myself, Karen. I had to say, you know, is there something that I'm exuding? Because you have to take ownership. You got to show up. Is there something that I'm doing? I said, well, we ain't doing it today in this pretty pink dress. Honey, I threw those shoulders back, a little bit of breasts I had at that time. And I walked out there and I smiled. I waved like Barbie. I sure did. And I strutted across that stage. And that was my first true test of self-esteem. I'll never forget it, because it was so impactful. It was shocking.
And what it was real. Like, how did you, at that age, discover that for yourself?
Hell, because I must have been what they said. I was arrogant. But I did, you know. But see, I was an only child.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't an only child. I had two older brothers, but there were 17 years between me and one, and 10 between me and the next. And me and my mother were peanut butter and jelly, you know, and I would get all the pretty dresses. And, you know, I always had money to go places. There was never too many no's. I had a stepfather, but there was no trickery or, you know, he was a stellar gentleman. He taught me art and culture and music. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. Right. And that wasn't the paradigm that a lot of these other children that I went to school with went. So with that, there was an air about me because I didn't understand anything else, which can be a disadvantage. And I had to learn to manage that as well, because I didn't consider myself braggadocious. But again, you know, oh, me and mom went shopping and I got, you know, 4 dresses and 3 pairs of shoes and let's go skating and this, that, and the other. That can be braggadocious to someone that is in a family of 5 and they're barely getting anything to eat. And, you know, there's some trickery going on in the household. So you have to manage this on both sides. It can be a double-edged sword. It really can. So as you evolve into this woman of grandeur and you realize who you are, you're struck by some challenging news that you had cancer. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that was June. It was about May, June, I discovered a lump in my throat. And I was actually at a creatrix conference. I'd gone, flown up to Queensland for the yearly creatrix conference. And I was lying in my room and thought, what's that? And I thought it was, because I've learned to love exercise, having released exercise meant death. I used to do CrossFit. So I just thought, oh yeah, it's muscle, it's muscular. But I thought when I came back and I'd been out Queensland for a couple of days not going to CrossFit, so I thought, oh, it's still there. The muscle should have, if it's muscular, should be gone. So I went to the doctor and she goes, oh, yeah, it's probably muscular, but we'll do some biopsies. So she biopsied the lump and my thyroid and it came back as cancer. And so I, immediately, went and got specialist, had a PET scan. And 29th of June, I went in for my operation. Now, remembering I'm an accountant, 29th of June here in Australia, June is our end of financial year. So I've been off on sick leave as the only accountant for my company.
Oh my gosh.
End of financial year. And I still can't do my accounting job because looking and concentrating to hold my head up is actually quite difficult. So when they had the operation, to remove the mass, they had to remove 2 neck muscles and part of my collarbone. So I have a lot of movement issues with my shoulder and neck, and it gets very weary and ends up, you can see it's probably still hanging down a bit. I'll try and straighten it for you, but.
Just take care of yourself. Don't worry. Don't worry about the optics of what other people think is wrong. You're comfortable, okay?
My partner just will walk up to me and he just puts his head to the side.
Oh.
our private joke. So through that, I realized, I went into the operation with no fear. I was, this needs to be done. Even having lost my father to cancer from a skin cancer, which what mine supposedly was, a squamish, I went in there with no fear. I'm going in there, we're gonna tackle this, we've got the strength, no problems. But I did have some unrealistic expectations. I believed I was gonna come out of the operation. 2 weeks afterwards, I came out of the operation, I was going to go to a girlfriend's hen's night. I was going to be going to New Zealand in September. I'd start radiation, be finished that before I go to New Zealand. So I was figuring within 2 months, I'd be back to me, back to my normal, what I was before the operation. So I did have to actually reach out for a few tweaks with the creatrix after my breakthrough to actually address the things that were being triggered by what's been going through for me. So things like unrealistic expectations, because what was happening is when I got out of hospital and I was still healing, I was in hospital for about 10 days. And then when things were not healing as fast as I originally thought, that unrealistic expectations was then bringing me down to an unhappy state. So instead of being this strong person who believed that I can do anything, I was starting to fall back into a little bit of a lull. So I did reach out and got some learnings on that. And recently, again, I'm never going to be me again. So kind of I needed to I'm recreating myself again, basically. And that's a big thing.
Again, like I said, you are an artist. You are creating, like here, a masterpiece. You can only see half of it, but
I'm your new masterpiece.
you are. And that's hard. That's like me. I was looking through some paperwork. I'm getting a jump on my, my taxes. Accountant, you'd be proud of me because I give you my records clean. I do. But I was looking at that and I said, you know, I've established these goals and I exceeded my goals. But what's really scary is now it's time to set new ones. Mm. And there you are in life. You figured out who you didn't want to be. You tweaked it and created something new. And now you have to reformulate that once again. And that's just like a good recipe. You're going to always add things. You're going to extract things. But it makes you the woman that you are, ever evolving, ever changing. And, you know, that's what I like about Creatrix is that you are able to create. You are able to design your own wish list. Yes, you are able to do that. And then you're able to pour into others. What would you tell a young woman that's struggling right now that, you know, has an identity crisis, doesn't know who she is, doesn't feel that she's fulfilled or good enough? What would you tell her?
The biggest thing is don't listen to the outside world. You have to, everything has to come from within. And this is what we teach with Creatrix and what the process is. Everything comes from within in ourselves. And as women, we have to align our head, heart, and gut. And so when you, a lot of stuff out there doesn't do all three. They might do the head and heart, or they might do the gut and head, but they don't do all three. So you actually have to align that, because as women, we are different. We are emotional, you know, we need a process that will allow us to not have to, like you say, keep picking at the scab. We need to actually release it so that it can heal. And when you're feeling not worthy, not good enough, what's actually doing is you're actually looking at what everyone else is saying and doing, rather than looking within and seeing who you are from your heart and from inside your soul. And when you can do that and actually listen to what your heart says to do and your soul says to do and how to feel about yourself, that's when things will change. You know, you need to.
As you're redesigning this masterpiece, you talk to a younger version. What are you going to say to a 65-year-old Karen D. Moll?
A 65-year-old? Mm-hmm. My old.
What are you going to say to your old self?
I'm going to say that, you know, I believe in myself and I do what I need to do to love myself and be my best friend. You know, quite often we're told to love ourselves, but sometimes we need to befriend ourselves first.
Absolutely.
Before we can actually love ourselves. And that's where I think a lot of people go wrong. They, you know, everyone spouts, you know, love yourself. Yes, you do need to do that, but sometimes we're not quite ready for that. Mm-hmm. So as 65, like once I become an old lady, I'm going to look back and go, I created myself to be the person I want to be and live the life the way I want to live it. And any stumbles I came across, I found my way to overcome it and to redesign how I live my life and to look at things in different ways. Like even with the cancer, I believed at the time that it's there for a lesson for me as well, to slow down, to do the things that I want to do, to spend more time on the things that I want to do. You know, life is not about out there, you know, working full time and doing all the things that you need to do. It's actually about slowing down and actually taking the time to enjoy life at the same time.
Exactly. And you're a testimony, you know, you are there to be a witness. You've bared witness to all of these things and you're able to share that with other individuals.
Yeah.
If you were,
we need to release and relearn everything. Like obviously once we have problems with going on, we need to release that and then maybe relearn, recreate, recode ourselves so that we can actually be the person we want to be. And that comes with reframing some of the things that we say about ourselves, that we hear from other people, and so that we can recreate who we are. And that all,
what do you think about the word fear? I think fear, a lot of people say, you know, I don't have fear. I do have fear, and I trust my fear because my fear is my boundary. It's my warning sign. It's a lot like pain. you know, it gives you a signal. It says, you know, stop, reassess, be cautious. What do you think about fear?
Fear is, we need fear, and we do actually is there for a reason, but it's when we allow that fear to stop us from doing the things that we want to do or we need to do. And we live in that fear as opposed to moving forward. So it's when something is a fear that is preventing you from being the person you want to be, we do need to look at that fear and see if we do need to actually reframe it, recode it, relearn it. So fear can be a good thing. Like if you're walking down the street and someone's following you and you've got your instincts are going off that there's something, you know, not good about it, that fear is required. You know, the fear that when I felt the lump in my throat, that fear, if I didn't act on that fear, I may never have found the cancer, and who would have known what would happen further down the track. So you do have to act on those fears. It's when we actually have a fear and we put our head under the cover and do nothing about it that it can be a problem for us. Yeah. And that's where Creatrix is amazing to help you release those fears, mm-hmm. because you do need to address some of them.
Because I tell people, you need to feel the fear yet do it anyway. You know, you've got to walk through the valley and the shadow of death.
The only problem with that as well is feel the fear and do it anyway, especially women in business. They feel the fear and they're doing it anyway, but then they feel like a fraud. So again, you have to address that fear and actually release that fear, because if you're doing that fear and doing it anyway, you're going out there on live on you know, Facebook and doing whatever you're doing to try and build your business. But if you feel like a fraud, you're not going to attract the people to you, because you're actually emanating this energy of fraud.
Right. So you're living the imposter syndrome.
Correct. Exactly that.
Putting and something so again, out there that's not true. What about boundaries? How do you set boundaries now? Because again, that's like me. I go back to the story of me and my adolescence. I set boundaries with those people. I said, I'm only going to let you so far before I address it. But with those boundaries, I had to live with inside of them as well. Mm. You know, because you can't be too pushy. You can't be too cocky. You can't be too arrogant. People say show up authentic. I tell them all the time, everyone can't show up authentic. Sometimes that's an ugly look.
Yeah.
What do you feel about boundaries?
So boundaries, again, it depends on how you make those boundaries around you. If they're boundaries to protect you and to keep you safe and happy in your life, but if you've got boundaries that are actually preventing from you from playing bigger that you want to play, well, then you need to sort of allow some of those boundaries. You need to open up the cracks a little bit. That's my belief. Boundaries are great. It's a bit like fear. If they are there and it's keeping you in an unhappy place because you've put up so many boundaries around yourself, then they're not good. So it's all subjective to the person of what's right for them. And no one can tell you what's right or wrong for you. It's all up to the person. So, you know, if I came along and said, okay, that boundary is no good for you, April, you need to get rid of that. Or all the brains on here, if you've got a boundary there, that's wrong for you. That's not correct. It's you have to decide the boundaries that are right for you and which boundaries you're ready to release and which boundaries you need to keep for your own safety, for your own happiness. So boundaries are good, but it depends on the person.
So we've talked about fear. We've talked about boundaries. Let's talk about trust. I'm not a person that gives trust 100%. Never have. I think, again, that situation impacted me to the point where, I'm telling you, at 13, I learned a lot, honey.
Yeah.
But looking at that, trust can hold you hostage. Because trust is a two-way street. I will trust you on the condition that you do this. I don't trust you because you've done that. What do you feel about trust and giving trust to people automatically?
I follow my gut. I trust my intuition. I think so. Again, how I trust people is dependent on how I feel, how they make me feel. If I feel safe with them, then I will trust. I'm actually a very trusting sort of person. I will tend to probably give trust to people before other people would, but I'm following my intuition with it. I think most of the time my intuition is usually pretty correct. And if someone does abuse my trust, well, then that's the end of that relationship. You know, it's a choice that I've made to give that trust. So, and again, it's a bit like boundaries and fear. If you are afraid to trust people, you could be letting yourself not experience some things that you're meant to experience. So learning to know when to trust and who to trust, again, it comes from inside. And a lot of times, if we've had traumas in our life, that's some of the things that we've learned to, we've created our life based on how that trauma affected us. And we've learned probably at a very young age sometimes that trust is not good because of trauma that happened to us back when we were at an age where we didn't understand any different. And we've learned that, oh, if we do this and we do that, that's how we'll stay safe. But as an adult, it may not be the right way to be. And it may be keeping you stuck in a life that you're not happy with, but you don't even know why. Because you haven't looked at why you don't trust, why you fear, why you've got these boundaries. So there are things that, again, but it has to be from the individual's perspective. You can't look at someone else and go, well, you should be trusting that person, because no one knows what you've lived through. Right. Only you can decide whether it's your time to trust more.
And each individual has their own relationship.
Correct.
I'm not, like, when I say I'm not trusting, I do trust people, but trust to me is a lot like love. It grows on a vine. I don't just give it out. You know, I look at it, I edit it, I filter it, I sort it. And there are people that I deal with that are not very trustworthy.
Yeah.
I asked this woman one time, I was interviewing her, and I asked her, because I love to ask interesting questions. If you were an animal, what animal would you be and why? You know what she told me she would be, Karen?
What?
A snake. I said, a snake? She said, yes. I said, well, you know, frame that out for me. What does that look like? She says, well, I'm low to the ground. I slide in. I slide out. I strike. And if I have to pour in venom, I'll pour in venom.
Wow.
And I was like, I thought about that. You know, I hired her because sometimes you need a snake. Sometimes you need somebody that's going to, you know, go low when you go high. But I knew how to position her.
Yes.
I knew how to strategize her. I knew how to put her in the right place because, again, I trusted her a lot more than I trusted others because she revealed who she was.
Yeah.
And I was able to appreciate that. That was very honest. That was very risky. You know, so I was like, okay, what do you think of unconditional love?
Unconditional love. Again, that's like trust. It's like anything. You will either give your love unconditionally if you trust someone. So it's hard to give unconditional love until you trust someone. You know,
let's stop right there. You say it's hard to give unconditional love until you trust someone. Mm-hmm. Okay, again, that trust is condition of love, and love is a condition of trust.
Trust.
But, you know, it all of it is full circle. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, you say, I love myself, I trust myself, I have no fear, you know, I limit my boundaries. Everything is very individualized, but it is all so cohesive. It's like an accordion. It all goes together as you pull and tug. But with this love thing, you know, love is, people say that you should love unconditionally. Well, newsflash brains, I tell you all the time, my love's got conditions. Because you come hitting on me, you stealing, you know, you trying to push up on Mr. Magnificent, girl, I'll scratch your eyes out.
I used to always say the same thing to my partner. You punch me once, or you hit me once, that's the end of it.
After he comes up off the ground, it's a whole total. Because I'm a fighter,
And he's I can tell you now, he's never been that sort of person, but it was always something. Again, I suppose I put a condition on my love at the very beginning. That was, it is true. We do. And I think we are formed in our life through our experiences, and the filters that we have are based on our experiences through our life. So your conditions will be different from my conditions. They'll be different from someone else's conditions that we put on our love and stuff like that. So each person is an individual and what they've lived through. You can have two people coming from the same family, my brother and myself, both brought up with the same conditions that happened in our life. It's just at different ages. He lost his father. He lost, you know, our stepfather. We lost our mum. Yet he deals with things a lot differently than what I have, because we've lived different lives as well as part of it. And so the filters we've put up, the friends we've had, the support I've had from my friends, are different to what he sort of experienced. So we all have our different filters. And it's when we start releasing those filters and actually looking through and realizing that we've stuck ourselves in the box because of these filters, and we can release the trauma and release the emotions that we have around them, you'll never change the experience you've had with it. But when you actually lose the power it holds on you, the emotion that it holds on you, we're still going to feel emotions, but it doesn't keep you stuck. And so unconditional love, all these things, they're all things that everyone lives with. It's just how to what grade do we actually put on it.
Exactly.
And it's all come full circle, as you said.
You know, I'm an observer of life, and a lot of people go through things. I watch what other people go through so I can dodge that bullet. A lot of things that you say come from within. But there's a lot of external influences. The negative talk from people, the judgment of people, the snarky looks, their perceptions, their comments. How do you filter? Because again, like those ugly little kids that were in the audience, and some of you out there right now probably looking at this interview, but look at me now. But anyway.
Sure your brains would never be like that. They'd all be wonderful people.
Yeah, well, now they have a brain. They didn't have a brain. Those things impact us.
Definitely.
They shape us. They mold us. What do you say to the person that's really being impacted by that outside noise?
And that is everything. That's why we are stuck, is because we listen to that outside noise. And that's where we need to learn. And this is where we need a process where we can actually get the learnings around how to not be affected by those things and get the answers inside. And when you actually do that, when something externally happens, you react differently to what you did before. And even to I can give you an example. When I just had a look at my I'm never going to be me again, I felt a lot of pain and a lot of aches and stuff from the you know, trying to exercise and the aches just brings on. And after getting the learning, things like I'm creating myself, exactly what you said, the learning to me actually before, that I'm creating myself. That was one of my learnings that came out. And when you actually see the perspective from inside looking out, that's come from inside you, you look at things differently. Your filters are different. So you react differently to those outside things. Same way as when you asked me about my relationship with my partner after having my breakthrough with Creatrix, I didn't change him. He hasn't changed. It's the perceptions I take from the way he reacts. It's the perceptions I take from someone else saying something to me and how I react to it. It doesn't light up the anger or the hurt, which it would have before. So once you know everything comes from the inside and you get those learnings, you feel differently and you react differently to everything outside.
And it's all about how you receive it. It's all about how you respond to it. Response is everything.
Yeah.
But people have to slow down. They have to give their self an opportunity to hear what a person is saying. Nobody wants to be criticized. Nobody wants to be made the butt of a joke. Nobody wants to take advice. They think that they know everything. We've become so sensitive. Mm. And that's a dangerous thing too, because it is what you are exuding a lot of times too. Yeah. You know, that you could be a cold piece. You could be out there and just, you know, mean, a bully, angry, and you look at yourself in the mirror and you got on this, you know, $500 sweater and $400 shoes and a $2,000 bag and still be just as cheap and no good. So you have to look at these things. You have to listen to them. You don't necessarily have to internalize them, but I think sometimes it is very important to analyze, knowing who you are, you have the pros and the cons.
Mm. The problem is a lot of the people who haven't done any sort of work on themselves don't understand that. They don't understand it's the filters of the traumas that they've been through that are actually causing these issues, the way they react to things. Someone who reacts quickly to anger, it's because of something that they've experienced in their life before. And it's their way, they've learned probably from a very young age, or even it could be things that it may not even be theirs, it's been passed down through epigenetics, that they've taken these things on and they react without knowing. And it's not until you release or recode and reframe those learnings that they've had from the past that they can then look at things differently. So again, it all has to come from inside, but they've got to realize that they've had things, and everybody's had traumas. Now, even people who've had, like I had a wonderful childhood other than, you know, grief. But even little things that are said to you as a child, like I was told as a six-year-old I shouldn't be wearing a bikini. Now, that hurt. And so then obviously weight became a thing for me. So there's, and not to mention my family are Dutch on my dad's side. And in Holland, back in the 18th century, they used to weigh women. And if they weighed heavy, if they weighed lighter, they must be taking herbs. So they must be witches, and they were put to, they were burnt at the stake. Now, I'm Dutch heritage, so I've got this belief, obviously, that would have been brought through in my genes, that if I weigh thin, I'll be put to death. So there's these things that we don't even know that could be passed on, but these traumas are what makes us react to things or overreact to things. And when someone realizes that they do this and they're overreacting and it's making their life miserable, that's when someone will reach out and actually say, hey, I want to do something about this. And they might, that's when women will find Creatrix. So
I am so glad that Creatrix has surfaced. It is now opened up here in the United States. I really hope that women take advantage of it. Things calm down so that we can cross borders. I have so many wonderful people that I want to meet there in Australia, everywhere from Perth to Sydney to Adelaide to South Australia, everywhere. It's going to be a big old party when I come. And you guys are doing amazing work. I'd love to be able to sit into one of the sessions. I've seen some of them online, but just to be in the room, because there's a different energy when you're in the room and you're feeding off of one another. It's great to do it virtually, but to have a sister come and be able to put her hand on your shoulder or to wipe your tears or to look into your eyes and be in that space is so powerful. And so I commend you and all of the ladies and all the transformologists. I really hope that it takes off like gangbusters here in the United States, like it's done there in Australia. I heard that you're also in Canada and London. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's starting to, you know, Maz is starting to get it further and further afield, which is fabulous.
Well, you've got 10 million hearts.
Exactly. If we want 10 million hearts free, we need more transformologists getting out there and actually, because we can't all do it ourselves, if you get 10 million.
You can't. And everybody has a different experience. And that's what I tell, you know, people that come on that are transformologists. So please come and share your story. Everybody comes for a different reason. They have a different result. They have a different technique. Because again, it comes from within and everybody is not the same on the inside. as far as being heart-centered and having emotional intelligence, building that relationship capital is really the investment that we need to make. Thank you so much for being with me, Karen, here on The Edge. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you.
Yeah, sure. So my website, I don't know whether I can actually hold it up to the camera in case anyone wants to see as well.
Scoot it over.
So there's my website.
Oh, wait, and you got a QR code. Look at
so the QR code is, I have a quiz, a no regrets quiz, and actually looks at some of the limiting beliefs that someone might be holding. So I invite people to invite your brains to actually jump on and do the quiz. And anyone who has listened to this and would like to, is interested in maybe having a chat about having a transformation done, I will offer all the brains a special price to actually have a conversation with me for an hour and identify some of their blockages, and a special price of $25 Aussie dollars. So there's the link, and I'll send you all this in, and so you can put it underneath the.
Yeah, they'll definitely be in the show notes and how to contact you. Yeah. And again, you know, we are sending you love and abundant light, my sister, from right here on the edge.
Thank you.
We want you to heal. And I want to see the masterpiece, okay? Picasso will have nothing on you, queen. Absolutely nothing.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed our chat. It's been absolutely amazing. I hope the brains got so much out of our conversation. I think we had a lot of fun.
We did have a lot of fun. And, you know, it was very philosophical and it was very real. And that's what I like to do on the edge. I don't want it to be cookie cutter. One size does not fit all.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And there's a lot of things going on. And trauma can be anything. It could be as small as, you know, someone hurting your feelings and not showing up for a date, or something very traumatic of seeing an accident or a murder. But whatever it is, how it impacts you is what's important. And you have to do the deep dive and unveil how to release it and how to make your pain your passion.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, when they actually identify it, with Creatrix, you don't need to relive it. You can actually, we identify it through conversations with the transformologists, listening to your words. And then once we clear it, you have a different perspective on it. So you don't have to, if it is painful for you, you don't have to relive through that pain like a lot of modalities out there making you sort of feel the pain and move through it. Well, we don't make you have to feel it, which is fabulous.
See? Brains is like a big old pencil with a big fat eraser.
Exactly. I like that. Might have to steal that one.
That's right. Go ahead. And you can go ahead and get rid of it because it's not necessary. You don't have to carry pain with you. You know, again, it can be in your toolbox. It's a part of the fear. It's a part of the boundaries. It's a part of the love and the trust. Okay, but it does not have to be the framework that you live in that frames your masterpiece. So thank you so much again, Karen Day.
Thank you very much, April. I really, really enjoyed it.
All right. Bye, brains. I love you guys.
Bye, brains.